What I'd like to do now is get into the quantum physics of this all. I've kind of given you an overview of the spiritual aspect of it and indicated to you something about the neurophysiology of all this, how your brain is indicative, is telling us that there's another part of you that isn't what you think it is, that seems to be in control. But now we want to get into, what does it mean to control? What is really going on at the most essential core of this presence, which is creating reality? In other words, we want to get into the real creator a little bit here from the quantum physics point of view. Well, let me explain a little bit about quantum physics. Prior to quantum physics, people thought the following way. I'm going to go back a ways. Let's go back a couple thousand years. The universe is purely magical. As above, so below, as within, so without. If I do this, maybe that will happen. If I do that, maybe this will happen. It was kind of like, whoa. I don't think people really thought too much about themselves creating of reality. There was a real creator that was the God in the heavens, the big guy, the big gal, the magical, that which was beyond my personal control. I couldn't do anything about it. That's, I think, pretty much how we saw things. Then came the Greeks. I'm jumping, I know. And I'm leaving a lot of stuff out, I know. Let me just go through these highlights. Then came the Greeks. And the Greeks said, you know something? There's earth, air, fire, and water. They're basic elements. And we can understand the universe very well if we could understand the laws by which earth, air, fire, and water transform and how matter works based upon the transformation of earth, air, fire, and water. And that was called a rational view of the universe, and that was essentially something we inherited from the Greeks. Suddenly we became interested in figuring things out. Now, the Greeks were kind of a little bit lazy. They liked to think, but they had slaves. And because they had slaves, they didn't like to do stuff. The way I see them is kind of like in the plays or the theatrical productions showing the Greeks in the movies laying around popping grapes, drinking wine, watching dancing girls, and just lazing about, you know. I see it kind of like that. So they didn't do much experimentation, these Greeks. They more or less had ideas about what was going on, and they just didn't bother testing their ideas. So, for example, they pretty well thought, well, you know, a feather is lighter than a cannonball. So naturally, if I drop a feather and a cannonball, the cannonball is going to hit the ground first because it's heavier. And they would drop the cannonball and the feather. And sure enough, the feather floats down and the cannonball zack. And so they said, well, we don't have to do any more experimentation than that. There's no inquiry into what makes the feather float or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. So they got us thinking, and, you know, there are errors in our thinking, but nevertheless, they were trying to figure out the laws of the universe. And then came the revolution in the 15th, the 16th, the 17th century with people like Copernicus and Galileo and Kepler, and suddenly things began to look even more law-like, and people began to look even deeper, and they began to understand that how gravity works and what falling objects do. Nevertheless, there was always this notion of law, and that if we could understand the law, if we could figure out the cause, we would get the effect, because the law says from this cause you get that effect. And that was it. Pretty much cut and dried kind of stuff. And that went on all the way up to the beginnings of the 20th century. And by the early 20th century, with everything more or less figured out, there came the thought, let's look at stuff that we normally can't look at with the naked eye. Stuff that's smaller than the naked eye, stuff which is maybe invisible to the naked eye. People were beginning to look into the nature of atomic reality. They were looking at maybe what would be called the electronic reality. What is an electron? What are atoms? What are atoms made of? And as he began to explore all of that kind of new way and began to devise experiments in which they could explore these kinds of things, and they tried to use the same basic models they had used before to understand all these things, they found themselves coming up with a real pickle. Because whatever they thought they could predict using the old ways and the old way of thinking gave the wrong answer. Always. They just could not get a scientific model of how atoms radiated light, how atoms behaved, what happens to them when you cool them down, when you heat them up. Everything they predicted was the wrong answer. They just kept getting it wrong. And clearly there was something else going on, and people didn't quite know what it was. So they began to figure out what are called fudge factors. The first guy to do fudge factoring was a guy named Max Planck, and he figured out a way to fudge factor in an idea which made it possible to understand how light energy was related to the temperature of a hot body that glowed. And when he did that, putting in his fudge factor, he was able to predict the spectrum of light that was actually observed. Spectrum means how much energy comes out at a certain color. How much is red, how much is yellow, how much is blue, how much is green, etc. And the old way of making that prediction gave the wrong answer. But the new way gave the right answer. And so the new way was with the fudge factor, and it simply said fudging, no reason, fudging, 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 cheating, lying, not telling the truth, fudging. This is what they did in those days because they couldn't figure it out. They said, the radiation energy has got to come in lumps, lumps of energy, bump, 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 no continuous flowing energy, bump, 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 lie, distortion, not the truth, truth meaning what I mean by truth, is what we know to be true from the ancient laws, from the laws of classical mechanics. The great Isaac Newton gave us those laws. The great James Clerk Maxwell gave us those laws. Those are the laws. Those are the truth. This is bump, 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 lie, distortion, cannot be true, but it gives the right answer, coach. Well, it's embarrassing that it does, but because energy can't be lumpy, it's got to be continuously in flowing, and like Newton and Maxwell said. But it gave the right answer. So people began to suspect or smell a rat that maybe what they thought was truth, quote, truth, the absolute truth, the scientific truth. Maybe the real lie and the so-called lie, energy is bumpy, 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 may be a truth that's just beginning to get revealed. Hint, hint, hint. This is kind of like the acting method I talked about earlier. The truth being, the old truth being, I am the guy with the stone in the shoe and I am a cripple. And the new truth, which is a lie, is no, there's something else going on there. There's something else. There's a deeper you. There's a deeper reality, which sometimes comes out lumpy. What is that reality? What's going on? Well, as time went on, Albert Einstein used the lumpiness to explain how electrons boiled off of cold plates when light, cold light, shined on these cold plates. Electrons came boiling out. How can you get boiling electrons from cold light on cold plates? This new idea of lumps of energy got you there. The light lump hit one of the electrons in the metal and gave it a good zonking, and that zonking kicked it out. Something new here. So maybe the lie has got more truth in it, and the truth has got more lie in it, and I don't know what's going on here. And that was what was going on by 1910. By the 20s, people began to wonder even more, and they began to question just what was light really? Was it wavy? Was it particle-y? Was it lumpy? The new stuff said it was lumpy, but the old stuff said it was wavy, and God, what's going on? Well, by that time, people began to wonder about particles themselves, and they began to look at experiments which showed that particles were able to do things that were kind of weird. Particles are supposed to be lumps, right? I mean, they're lumpy, 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 lumpy. They're not supposed to be woo, 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 wavy, 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 gravy. They're not supposed to be that. They're supposed to be lumpy. So how do you get waves from lumps or lumps from waves? So people were doing experiments, and they were looking at electrons, which are supposed to be lumps, and they were finding that these electrons were sometimes wavy, wavy. They would do wavy things. And they wondered, what the heck is going on? How can they be wavy when they're lumpy? And that led into what is called wave mechanics. And that got a lazy student named Erwin Schrödinger, who was working on wave mechanics at the time, to begin thinking about how do you develop a waviness to electrons when they're inside of atoms. And that created what is called the Schrödinger equation, for which he got the Nobel Prize, by the way, and created what is now called quantum physics. It became the core equation of quantum physics. And what was very interesting about it is it opened up a kettle of fish that we are still recovering from the smell. It has knocked us out because it said that things could either be wavy or lumpy, and it depended on you. Woo! Not on itself. It depended on you. You chose whether they would look like lumpy lumpies or wavy wavies. And you were the source. You were the creator of whether things could be lumpy or wavy. By how did you do that? By setting up an experiment, by designing an experiment, by shaping the experiment, you could make it appear waviness or lumpiness. You can make your results appear lumpy or wavy. Now, hold on there. You mean I made it lumpy or wavy? Well, in a way, yes. You mean I can see? Well, in a way, yes. Well, I don't know. How does that work? Well, you know something. There's a deeper mystery here. And I want to tell you about that. Because this deeper mystery also tells you something about your reality creation and how you create reality. And it also explains a little deeper insight into the relationship between Laurence Olivier and the Nazi dentist, between Dustin Hoffman and Retsu Ritsu, between the elephant and you.